Lindy Ruff would not be sitting up here if he did not believe this team could win. That's why he's here. He's here to win. This is about now. This is about the players in that locker room now. This is about the fans that come in here and can believe in something great. That's why he's sitting here.
From day one, we want to get better every day. That we want to put the work in. I want them to challenge each other to be better. Be better as a line, be better as a D pair. Just bring energy, bring enthusiasm, get better from day one to the last day of the year.
It's exciting. I think growing up being a Sabres fan and watching Lindy behind the bench all those years is very nostalgic and just super excited for the opportunity to be coached by such a legend.
Now Quinn, far corner. He'll play it up top. Shot from the point. Benson scores!
Possession for Thompson. He's got a man wide open to the far circle. Shot scores! There it is, J.J. Paterka. It is hometown and their new home rink.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Sabres. WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's one of these multitasking days. It's a football Friday. It's the Sabres opening day. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. You're vibing your machine head over there? I saw Bush play at the Odd.
Wow.
Yeah. What year were you born?
95.
I think it was 97.
97?
Yeah. 96. Might have been 96.
Close in 96?
I saw Bush at the Odd.
Okay.
It was actually...
They might have done... They did concerts at the Odd after the Sabres closed there, I think.
So, I'm pretty
sure...
If
I remember right.
Again, hazy memory.
I mean, I don't remember it. I would have, you know, known or heard about it.
Bush, Machine Head, and the Sabres Black and Reds are so closely intertwined because I think the Sabres introduced the Black and Red soon before that because it was Bush and the Goo Goo Dolls and No Doubt, and this is where people listening are like, I was at that show. The Goo Goo Dolls, they wore a black and red goat head, and it was kind of a new thing.
Okay.
Somebody, whether it was Robbie, I don't know, but I was at that show at the Odd. I also saw Bush at Marine Midland or whatever it was called at the time. Happy Sabre season.
I've got it for April 13th, 1996.
I was there.
Yeah. Machine Head came out in 1994.
Yep. Bush touring by then. It was on the album 16 Stone. Great album. Anyway, happy Football Friday. Happy Sabres opening day. We have open phone lines. Call us on either one. Give us your Sabre. Are the Sabres going to make the playoffs, and are the Bills going to make a win over, going to beat the Texans?
For Locked On Sabres, I asked everybody to give me a number for how many points you think the Sabres are going to have this year, and then I averaged it out. Where do you think they landed? Because every single person in the media is projecting them for 88 points. There were two more yesterday I saw with 88 points. Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
I mean, isn't that the same as predicting a football game's final score is going to be 24-20?
Kinda.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, yeah, right around here. Nobody would be mad if you picked 52, you'd be mocked, and if you picked 110, you'd be mocked.
So what do you think the average was for fans?
For fans,
what was the average?
94,
93.5. The lowest was 80.
Okay.
The highest
was 164.
Was 119. The second highest was 102. There were a couple people in the hundreds, but somebody, maybe even a little sarcastically, I don't know. I counted it either way. You give me a number, I counted it. 119 and winning like the President's Trophy. I did, looking at like the overall of the league in the East, there's six teams I think are definitely in. And then like, I had a hard time picking two teams I think are definitely better than the Sabres going into the year. There are six I think are definitely better. By the way, New Jersey I think is one of them. New Jersey's one of the six. That team is definitely better.
Okay.
But, like, Ottawa's definitely better. Washington's definitely better. Philly's definitely better. Pittsburgh, like, I don't know. After the top six, I had a tough time. You're competing against eight other teams. You know, like, don't differentiate the Sabres from, like, those seven teams, maybe, that would all be in the mix. But the wild card positions, I'm into it. I think they could do it. I don't think you can get top three in the division. It just still seems like an impossible task.
Sabres to make the playoffs or Bills to get the one seed? Who wants that? Who wants to try that one on? Sabres to make the playoffs or Bills to get the one seed? The AFC looks available.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game that I'm going to say this Bills-Texans game. Is it wrong to say it's one seed context? The winner is 4-1. And The Bills will play the Chiefs. Do the Texans play the Chiefs? Let me see if they've got a matchup there. The Texans have not exactly got off to a great start. I mean, they're 3-1. They got hammered by Minnesota, who's looking very good. The Texans play after this, the Patriots, Packers, Colts, Jets, Lions. I mean, they've got their share of top. They do play the Chiefs. Okay. And they play the Ravens. So all these top AFC teams play each other, and there's going to be this mishmash of what? 12-5. 11-6 teams. Tiebreakers will be head-to-head. The Bills will have played the Ravens, Texans, and Chiefs. Yep. The Texans will have played the Bills and Ravens and Chiefs. The Ravens played the Chiefs. Like they're all playing each other. So this one is in the tapestry of the tiebreaker for the one seed. So it's a big one.
I might say the Bills getting the one seed.
You think it's more likely than the Sabres making the playoffs?
Yeah. I think... It's tough. I think it's close. I think I would say Bills getting the one seed. I know they've got a superstar quarterback. I know they've got a number two overall pick. It would never be surprising if a quarterback that good carried his team to getting the one seed. I have no clue how good the Sabres are. I don't know. Lukanen, I don't know that he's not going to regress. Every goalie regresses. There's like three goalies in the world in the last 20 years, they don't go back and forth. Well, Lundqvist never did it, and Vasilevsky, somebody that doesn't do it. Like Marc-Andre Fleury is going to make the Hall of Fame. Go look at his numbers. It is like a roller coaster. Like Lukanen's just going to be 920 for his career.
To that point,
it's not realistic.
Aren't the Sabres again? Football Friday. Call us on the Bills. We got Chris Brown coming up. Mark Vandermeer, play-by-play of the Texans at 9. So plenty of football still coming, but it is Sabres opening day, and you've got me on something here. Is it not very obviously true that right now the Sabres have the best 1-2 goalie scenario that they've had in you fill in the blank how many years?
I agree with that because I would probably put the number at like
10 years?
Miller and Roth.
Right. They've got
Miller and Roth.
Lukanen has shown he can do it. We'll see how long that, even if there is, what I'm getting at is if there is a little regression, the backup plan is the best backup plan they've had in 10 years.
I'm more confident in Levi than any number two they've had in
Who was that over the years? It used to be Lukanen when he hadn't proven anything.
Well, it was Comrie.
It was Eric Comrie. It was on and on. Like
Carter Hutton.
He was the starter, and then he was the backup when he had the eye issue.
But even
he couldn't see. He had a vision issue.
Right,
like,
right. When he became the number two, we found out after he had eye surgery during the season. Like, on the list of nuts things that have happened during the playoff drought, they had a goaltender that couldn't see.
Yeah.
Who else would have been in there? Chad Johnson? He might have been one of the good ones, actually, if we look back on the career
Dustin
stats.
Dustin Tokarski, Aaron Dell. Oh. Right, like since
who's their number two when they try to make the playoffs 2 years ago? Was it Lukanen?
2 years ago when they just finished out,
they missed by one.
That's Allmark, Tokarski, Hutton, Johansson, Michael Hauser, Lukanen, and
listen to this
list. Someone named Stefanos Lekas. Did he play in a game? He did not.
No way.
No, he did not. Okay.
I mean, come on. Listen to how many goalies there though.
Yeah, and right now it's Craig Anderson. They brought back for another season of help us get through this. Right, like last year, Anderson and Comrie, and you know. Comrie's 886 and Anderson is 908.
Yeah.
You know, like, so.
Levi was number two in the AHL in save percentage last season. And do you want to know where he ranked last year with his. He had a sub 900 save percentage for the Sabres. He did. But do you want to know where he ranked in goals saved above expected per 60 last season? He was number seven in the NHL, right behind Connor Hellebuck. He faced. By the advanced numbers, the shot attempts he saw, I don't know why this happened, it was very different from Lukanen. He saw one of the toughest tests in the league last year relative to how much he played, and he did above what was expected of him. And he was a star prospect in the first place. He then went to Rochester and dominated.
Yep.
He was 21, which any other... Go look at the list of the other 21-year-old goalies that are top prospects in the NHL. None of them were even in the NHL last year. Like, one of them was, and he was a backup. And he didn't even play well. Askarov, maybe. So, like, for Levi, I've got... Last year might have felt like down year for the hype of Levi. There's no reason to believe to me he is not still on track to be a top number one goalie. But I don't need him to be that yet. I just need him to be...
Yeah.
You need, just give me 30 games of not cratering their schedule.
Right. Plan B or plan 1B if, you know, plan 1A goes off the rails. Blaze in Buffalo. Hey, Blaze, good morning.
Yeah, hey, guys, good morning. You know, I just get frustrated with the Sabres because it's all this talk about the bottom six. It's almost like everybody eats from the Bills. Like, the number one guys are who determine the fate of the season. The problem last year, like, yeah, the bottom six was terrible, but the problem was the top six guys weren't scoring. And I don't know if, like, Thompson's injury is enough for an explanation for, like, why, like, just why he didn't. I don't know. It's so frustrating. Like, I'm 23. I haven't seen the Sabres in the playoffs since I was, like, 10. I barely remember the 05-06 teams, like, the last time they were legitimately good. I remember my cousins being excited about it, but I don't know. So I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
But the bottom six doesn't move the needle for me at the end of the day.
Thanks, Blaze. I like this actual comparison to everybody eats versus bottom six. And listen, it's nice to have those things be good, but you're right. This is part of the... I mean, the comparison is not exactly a perfect one, but I totally agree that what's going to get the Sabres to the playoffs, Paul said it, Tage back to 40 goals. They need their best players to be their best players. They need Tage and Quinn and Peterka and Tuck and Cousins to score, to put up points. Skinner's gone, and okay, there's a added positive there because his defensive limitations won't be here. I mean, he went to Edmonton. He's going to play with Dreisaitl. So they think he's good enough to play and score, and we'll see what he does there. I'm with you. Like, it's the same thing as everybody eats. I don't want to fight against everybody eats, but watch Atlanta last night. That's an everybody eats offense, and it has Drake London. You don't have to pick between having Davante Adams and having other good receivers. And sometimes I think these conversations about everybody eats make it seem like you have to pick one. The Bills had Diggs with Beasley and Sanders and Davis. That was an everybody eats offense.
Mm-hmm.
You do need, if you're ultimately going to be good, this is Blaze's point about the Sabres, and this is how I feel about this Bills offense. If you're great, it's because people showed up as great. And it's not you can't smoke and mirrors your way to a great offense. Players will have to be great. Allen is. Shakir is showing signs of being really, really good. We're hoping Coleman blossoms into a great player. But you aren't going to get by with, you know, oh, today was Mac Hollins' day to get 60 yards. That's not going to do it on the grand scale of getting to where you want to be. Now, with the Sabres, you know, you don't need Tage to be McDavid. You need him to be the guy that he was, which is what, like the 15th best player in the sport for a year? He was awesome. Him back at the top, Dahlin, where he's going to be, you know.
They need their best players.
To be their best players.
To be on par or close to on par with the other playoff teams, with the other top teams.
There's a million ways to say it, but one of the other ways to say it is they can't have their leading point getter have 60.
Right.
Because that's what they were last year.
Right. That can't even be close to true.
Right. A bunch of guys with 60 ain't going to do it. A guy with 130 is a big deal. I mean, that's a big number. So
don't you need somebody to be like in an awards chase to be legitimately good?
Yes.
Somebody. One person.
Dahlin to be in the Norris.
Or Tage to win the maybe not the Hart, maybe the Rocket.
Yes.
You know, like for most goals. Or...
And this is...
Lukanen for the Vezina, like as a top five guy for that. Just don't you need one guy to be in that race?
Yeah. I never, ever...
One of the races.
...want to shy away from the stars. Stars win. That's who wins these championships. It's Hall of Famers and stars. And you could point out, well, what about the Chiefs? I mean, the Chiefs, of course, have Mahomes, and they've had Kelce.
And Chris Jones.
Three top 10 players in the NFL every single year. They're voted in the top 10.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they have a Hall of Fame coach. It is stars. And you build things around them that insulate those stars, and that's your way forward. In Houston, like, we'll see. Diggs is their insulation. That's the difference between the pass catchers of the Texans and the Bills right now. The Texans had two guys emerge. Nico Collins emerged to be one of the best receivers in football. Tank Dell very much outpaced draft expectations, and now Diggs is like the insulation for that. Here, I've got Keon Coleman hopefully ready to take some steps forward. I've got Curtis Samuel asking, where is this guy? He was supposed to be a little bit of your insulation. I mean, the Bills, it's kind of all insulation, and it's Allen, right? It's no second horse right now to carry an offense with him. It's We've got a bunch of guys that we hope can do a little bit, but someone hopefully emerges from that. That's the best case scenario in the next 3, 4, 5, 10 weeks, is somebody proves to be worthy of teams looking at it and saying, like, well, we cannot let that guy beat us. I mean, Kincaid has that to a degree right now where they're focusing on him, but it's even got to be more.
It's got to be more. Defenses might stop doing that or at least dial it back a
well,
little bit.
Well, if all they have to focus on is Kincaid and there's no problem, then they'll definitely just keep doing that.
They're just the middle.
They're taking the bets that, like, you don't have anything on the outside. We don't have to have any fears out
there. That's the thing. It's maybe a combination of it. I'm just taking away the middle. I'm taking away their slot receivers if I can, and I'm taking away Kincaid. Or I'm trying to do that, and I'm daring the Bills to throw it to the outside. And right now, the only play, to my imagination, that seems like it works on the outside is the back shoulder Keon Coleman play that we saw a couple of times. The contested catch to Coleman. And that has its place. But good luck making that one of, like, the lifebloods of your offense, because that's what it looked like on Sunday. It looked like that was the only play they had. The only play that was working was either Allen doing something hero ball to the sideline to Shakir, or what were the other plays that worked against the Ravens? It was Coleman back shoulder. And I just think you're going to have a tough time making that more than just a, you know, once in a while type of play for
you. It can be in the repertoire, right, but you can't build the whole offense out of back shoulders. I mean, it's an important play to have. It's a tool to have in the box.
Meanwhile, on the Houston side of things, like, to me, it's like almost coincidental that they have Diggs for this, but they do. They could have had Keenan Allen. That was the guy they were originally trying to trade for before they went after Diggs. Houston is, to me, like the real version of everybody eats, because they're all good or even great. ESPN Analytics has their open scores that they track how good our receivers are getting open. And on the season so far, Malik Nabers is number one, and then Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins are number two and number three. Like, they have great players. That offense is, I think, when it's at its peak, everybody eats because everybody is so good. Just Diggs will get his targets. Collins will be number one because he's maybe a top five receiver in the sport now. And Tank Dell will get involved. Dalton Schultz will get involved. Mixon will get... They have a bunch of guys that are really good, and they do all get the football enough, I think, to warrant being called the same thing. But they just don't have to... The Bills have this idea of everybody eats, but I just don't know that anybody's worth eating, if that makes sense. I need you to actually be good at the sport first before I'm committed to having you involved in the offense.
Right. You don't want to commit six targets to Mac Hollins for the sake of it.
Right.
I need those going to Kincaid and Shakir.
It's almost like they have this idea of balance. It's like, it feels like you're more balanced if, hey, everybody is below average. If I have five guys that are all below average, well, it feels like everybody eats because everybody's kind of on the same tier together. But you want them on the same tier, on one of the higher tiers.
Yeah.
I don't want four number four receivers and spread it around. I want four guys that are all, you know, top 15, top 20 at what they do, and then spread it around. That's the Niners, too.
And that might be where it's a bit of a transition year. And back to, like, this offense did look great for 3 weeks. And one bad game, okay, we'll see. This is where Curtis...
It looked great for 3 weeks, though, in part because one of their receivers was playing above expectation.
Right, which is Shakir.
Yes.
Yeah. And Kincaid was... Everybody else was kind of quiet. James Cook was a big part of their offense, too. This is where Curtis Samuel is, like, the buzzword today, right? We asked Sal, who of the everybody eats, who needs more on their plate? He said Samuel. And I agree. And Joe Brady talked about it, finding ways to get Curtis Samuel the ball. Only if, by the way, and this is kind of to your point, only if, though, he's good. Only if... The things we thought we were getting from him.
Right.
You know, he plays the role. Doesn't he play, I'm going to use blasphemy because this guy's really good, so I'm not saying he's this guy, but doesn't he play the Jaden Reed role? Jaden Reed.
He's supposed to.
He can be used on jet sweeps. He can be used running the ball. I mean, Jaden Reed runs the ball. Jaden Reed's yards after catch. He's got good speed.
But he's also He's burning guys down the field.
He's awesome. And yeah. Samuel is supposed to be fast. Hey, this guy's been with bad quarterbacks his entire career. Put him with Josh Allen and let those two cook. So he still is to me, Joe, the way out of the whole Davante Adams conversation, or the way out of do they have enough weapons here, is for Samuel to pop. Like people did expect him to pop. When they acquired him, Samuel, you know, Matt Harmon, Reception Perception, who comes on the station in the afternoon show, like, he loved the signing, has loved Samuel for a long time. Nothing but good things to say about Curtis Samuel. And it's off to a slow start. It's a long season. We'll see where it goes. I do think, like, unlocking the offense more so to another tier where you don't have games like the Baltimore game, it's either going to be Coleman or Samuel. And I think the expectation should be Samuel, veteran in the league, has had success, has worked with the coordinator. You're not asking too much of your rookie, which would be okay to ask him too. But I think Samuel is the target here for this. We'll talk with Chris Brown when we get back on all this, all things Bills. Bills Texans coming your way the Sunday 1 o'clock. We'll call that segment right there about Curtis Samuel. Who needs to just get results? Dan Chacha, injury attorneys, just who needs to get results? That's brought to you by Dan Chacha, injury attorneys. No worries, just results. Curtis Samuel. Let's get some results out of Curtis Samuel in this offense. Jeremy and Joe, Chris Brown on the other side here on WGR on a Football Friday.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women.
Football Friday. Go to the Western Hotline for our weekly chat with Chris Brown. Play-by-play of the game Sunday, 1 o'clock from Houston. He'll be in the booth with Eric Wood, Sal Capaccio there as well. I have it here on WGR. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, guys.
It's a big one Sunday. We were just pointing out that, you know, the Bills play the Texans, the Ravens, the Chiefs. The Texans play the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs. All these teams, maybe the four leading candidates for home field advantage and the first round bye. Like, it's week five, but I feel like we're going to be talking about who won this game going forward for the next 5, 6, 10 weeks.
Yeah, we probably will. I mean, we're talking about division winners, right, from last year, and they're playing first place schedules. And I think that's the test for Houston. I mean, yeah, it was nice that they won the division last year, but they were playing a last place schedule. So, you know, now you're playing a first-place schedule. Can you still hang with the big boys when you're actually playing the big boys? That's the test for the Texans. For the Bills, this is old hat. You know, they've been playing first-place schedules for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and I think the test for the Bills here, you know, Baltimore, maybe that's the phrase people are using is a unicorn matchup where they test you in ways that not many teams do. For Houston, it's a good group of receivers. It's a good young quarterback. And I'm kind of like ready to lean back on Sean McDermott, Bobby Babich, and what they usually do in the passing game, whether that's against the Dolphins, against Kyler Murray earlier this year, against Trevor Lawrence. Like, this defense generally has the answers to stop teams in the passing game. And this is the next test. And for me, I feel like it's an opportunity for a bounce back, if I may, after the loss last week.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, the Bills under Sean McDermott since 2019 are 18-5 after a loss. They've only had one set of back-to-back losses each of the last 4 years. So when they lose, they very rarely lose again. And I think it's just, you know, part of the process that Sean McDermott talks about all the time. And I think the players feel like they just didn't bring the energy to last week's game to match what the Ravens put on the field. And I think that has them redoubling their efforts to have a much better performance on the road this week. And, you know, at its core, the Bills defense is designed to stop the pass. And that's pretty much the only thing the Texans are doing well right now. So I think it's strength on strength, which to me is a much better situation for Buffalo.
And I think, you know, light boxes, this will be one of these games. The Bills have done this in the past where they will very much, I think, invite Houston to run. And you mentioned Houston's not running it well, and they might be down their top two running backs as well. So Houston will have to use their strength to pass into the strength, even though the Bills are inviting the run.
Right. And I think if you look at Buffalo's pass defense specifically, I mean, Christian Benford and Rasul Douglas have been outstanding. Yes, you've been without Taron Johnson. Cam Lewis, I think, has been, you know, decent there at the position in Taron's absence. So, you know, if it becomes a matchup-type game, I think you at least feel good about what Benford and Douglas have done chiefly, and then even Cam Lewis. So hopefully that all works out, you know, in terms of defending their passing game.
How do you think the Bills will do sufficing Von Miller not being in there with their pass rush? He didn't play a lot last week, Chris, but before that, obviously, he had been super impactful as an edge rusher.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of pass rush opportunities last week, right? I mean, they were getting first downs before they even got to third down, the Ravens were. So you can kind of understand why Miller's snap count was down. But I'll tell you, I'm very excited to see Javon Solomon with more of an opportunity here. Believe me, I'd prefer to see the veteran Von on the road, especially, you know, in his home state, probably amped to play the game. That's not an option. So, you know, Solomon played sparingly against the Jags, and he has a sack strip fumble in the game, granted against backups at that point in time. But Laremy Tunsil, even if he does play at left tackle, is not 100% healthy. He's been playing hurt the last couple of weeks and obviously has not been practicing fully this week. So if he plays, he won't be 100%. And Solomon is a player that has impressed his teammates. I mean, Greg Rousseau we had on our show, and he pretty much, I asked him, you know, who's the most impressive player in your room? And he said, Javon Solomon, just because of the strength he has with his hands and his ability to bend around the edge. So I think with extended action, I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table here. And then I think Tuhill and Smoot, you know, they're not pop-off-the-film players, but they're reliable, steady-Eddie-type players, and sometimes that's just what a defense needs when you lose a player the caliber of Von Miller.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline as we gear up for Texans and Bills. Chris, a lot of the conversation this week has been about whether it's Davante Adams' speculation. It's been about the receiving core and what the Bills can get out of this. And Shakir banged up is not exactly good news. We'll see if he's able to go. Whether it's Coleman or Samuel, you know, the question we're asking today in a Twitter poll is, like, everybody eats, which Bills target do you think should maybe get a little bit more on their plate? Because Samuel's usage so far has been a bit surprising. Kincaid has run fewer routes than Mac Hollins. I just found that stat there for you. Came across on Twitter feed. Like, who do you think the Bills and Joe Brady might get an eye on getting a little bit more involved?
Yeah, I mean, logic would say Samuel, right? Just in terms of the kinds of routes we've seen Shakir run, those are kind of in Samuel's wheelhouse. But then you have to remember that Coleman was used a lot in the slot at Florida State. So I'm very intrigued to see how Joe Brady draws this up this week if Shakir can't play. And, yeah, you're right. Samuel's usage has been a little curious. It's been on the light end. I think a lot less than we anticipated, you know, coming into the season. So do they choose to go with the veteran player on the road, giving him that role? Or do they put the rookie in a new role that he hasn't really done, at least from what we've seen, within the scope of the offense? I'm tending to think he leans toward the veteran here to make plays, but maybe if it doesn't work through the course of the first half, maybe he does switch gears and put a bigger target there in the middle of the field in Coleman. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Coleman in the slot, because his draft profile, there were plenty that liked him all over the place, and there were a lot of people that liked him as a big slot. And I wonder, you know, this might come down to, you mentioned veteran versus young guy, might come down to how sure they were Shakir's going to miss. Again, we don't know that yet, but if they had an idea on Wednesday Shakir's going to miss, then they could spend the week trying to get Coleman ready for that job. And that could really boost him and give him some opportunities. Yards after catch, too, because there's another place, Chris, where we know Coleman has the ability yards after catch. So if it's – he used to return punts, and if you want to get the full skill set from him on display, back shoulders are nice. Back shoulders never going to be a yards after catch play, right? So to maybe give him the opportunity to show what he can do with the ball in his hands, maybe that is a spot he could step in for Shakir.
Yeah, it's possible. I will say, though, that the top three cover players for Houston are very impressive. Kwame Lassiter, you know, and then along with Stingley on the outside,
Yeah.
they're really good players. But I think the most underrated cover man is Petrie. He plays safety, but he is their full-time nickel, and it's a role he played at Baylor, too. He was like the Swiss Army knife of the Baylor defense. He's actually a former teammate of Terrell Bernard, and Bernard was even talking about him this week. He goes, yep, he's doing everything he did at Baylor, and he's doing it really well. Petrie is an excellent nickel corner. I think he's very underrated. So it kind of tells me, you know, if try the veteran there in that matchup. If you don't think that's going to work, maybe attack Petrie with size with Coleman and see how that goes.
Yeah, what we've spent a lot of time here, Chris, on the matchup, obviously. The Texans kind of on the overall for the season. Like, how much of a threat do you really see them as in the AFC? Because they had all the hype. It's not perfect, though, this year yet. Like, it hasn't looked... It's sloppy. I've seen that term used about them a bunch. They actually, like, point differential-wise, I think they're third in their own division. But the rest of the division really actually doesn't look that good. So they might cruise to that, and maybe they'll be a team that, as long as they figure it out by December and January, you might have to put them on that upper echelon, even if they're not looking great, just because I feel like they're going to cruise to winning their division.
Yeah, I think it's a haven't-put-it-all-together type situation for them, because they have the horses. I mean, their roster is ridiculous just in terms of the talent they've been able to assemble there. Nick Caserio's done an outstanding job of mixing, you know, vets in with young players. I mean, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter off the edges. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's they're probably the envy of a lot of teams with the amount of talent they've been able to put there. But that's what you can do when you have a quarterback on his rookie contract. I mean, he hasn't even turned 23 yet. I think that happens this week coming up. Stroud, you know, we've seen this before, guys, right? You got a great quarterback on a rookie contract. You can spend a lot of money elsewhere. I mean, the Niners did it, and now Houston's doing it. And, you know, they're hoping they can get to the promised land before they have to pay Stroud gigantic money, which will probably be, God, $65 million a year by the time he's up for contract. So that's what they're trying to do here. And I think they're just trying to pull all those pieces together. And there were a lot of new pieces there. They haven't done it yet. Let's hope it continues, at least for this week.
Chris Brown. Thanks, Chris. Enjoy the game. We'll chat on Monday.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Enjoy the game.
Chris Brown will be on One Bills Live. Have you this afternoon as well. Bills and Texans. We'll talk with Texans play-by-play man Mark Vandermeer coming up at 9 o'clock in front of the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. Jeremy and Joe on Football Friday on WGR. Keep the killers rolling here for a second. All right. Hey, tailgate trivia. Learn about this. I've got information for you on tailgate trivia. Tune in during Bills game day during the regular season for your chance to answer tailgate trivia question presented by Game Day Hospitality. It's your chance to win two VIP tickets to Game Day Hospitality's Red Zone Tailgate Party. Tickets include food, drink, entertainment, and access to the VIP tent. Visit our contest page at WGR550.com for details. All right, a couple very quick notes. One, this is the Killers, which is great. There's a podcast out there called 60 Songs That Explain the 90s. It's the absolute... No one is better... There are a million great podcasts in the world. No one is better at podcasting than this dude, Rob Harvilla, who does 60 Songs That Explain the 90s. He's just started the 2000s, mm-hmm. And the first song is Mr. Brightside.
The song.
You will not spend a better hour and a half of your life than listening to this dude talk about music.
Mm-hmm.
Except for these 4 hours of this show.
Yes.
And the other, and North Carolina Automata Extra Point Show, and One Bills Live, and Sabres Live, and the Sabres game, and Chopin Bulldog, and the Nightcap. Yep. Other than that, anyway, I'd highly recommend it. One other thing. We've got Mark Vandermeer, Houston play-by-play man, coming up next segment, then the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. You know, Joe and I are playing golf today.
Mm-hmm.
We played on Wednesday.
Yep.
There's a thing about golf that they say, don't speak negative thoughts into the air. Like if you say, oh, don't hit it left here, that's bad. You'll hit it left. Don't even give your brain the thought of left.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not supposed to say the things that are bad because they might get in your head about being bad, shouldn't you say the things that are good? You shouldn't worry about jinxing yourself, because if you say it, that means you're envisioning it, and that's good.
So basically declare... Yeah.
Like, I'm going to play well today. I'm going to go out and I'm going to get birdies today.
I thought you were saying more like shot to shot. Like, all right, I want to put this right of the right side of the green.
Maybe.
And then bam, right side of the green.
Yeah. Don't fear success. I told Josh in the break.
Although, I kind of do play golf like I fear success because I usually am someone that goes for middle of greens.
Well, that's
try not to take any crazy unnecessary risk, which doesn't always hold up. But
yeah. I think it's the right way to play. I mean, anyway.
Yeah. Because that would be fearing success. Hey, I got to carry this water 220 to get to the green in two.
Well, I mean, are you good enough to do it is another thing about golf.
10% of the time. I don't want to fear the 10% success, do I?
That's right.
Maybe just be realistic about it.
I told Josh this in the break, and I also told you yesterday. Today, I'm going out there with the mindset of breaking 80 for the first time.
Let's go.
I am playing well enough to do it. I've never broken 80. I shot an 81 on Wednesday.
And we're playing a scoreable course today.
I'm going to break 80 for the first time.
It's all lining up. At the temperature, I mean, we're like low 60s.
Let's go.
It's lining up.
That number is going to be a 7. The first number I write down at the end of the day is going to be a 7. I'm doing it. Today's the day.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to be a 7 on the first hole.
That's right. Take the pressure off.
I think you just jinxed yourself the wrong direction,
there you go.
Maybe.
Jeremy and Joe, it's Football Friday. It's Sabres opening day. What a time to be alive. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Sub. Start your game day the Crosby's way. The Texans' side of the story, Mark Vandermeer. He is the voice of the Texans. He'll join us next on WGR.